It's Monday.
It's February 9th.
And the word of the day is duplicative, which you already know the meaning of. I'm not like making some larger point the way that Heath does. I really like to say duplicative. It's got a great mouthfeel.
Duplicitous.
Yeah, and I'm also going to say that I really like to say duplicative and think it's got a good mouthfeel.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Michael Marshall.
I'm Noah Illusions, and broadcasting delayed from America's Far Center, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, Olympians will get private about their jump technique.
We will learn that not everyone in the Epstein Files is a bad guy, actually.
And Marsh will take way too long to give that statement context.
But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats, Eli Bosnick and Michael Marshall. Gentlemen, without Heath here, what the hell are we going to do if we need something from that cabinet above the refrigerator?
Ooh.
Okay, I don't know, but if the solution involves all of us stacking up on each other's shoulders, I'm calling not it on being underneath Eli. Like, there's nothing in that cabinet that can be worth that.
That's
smart.
True. That's
true. Smart. In our lead story tonight, the Justice Department released about 3 million documents related to the Jeffrey Epstein investigation on January 30th, a mere 72 days after the deadline in the bipartisan law about that Trump signed. This represents about half of the documents they were legally required to have released 72 days earlier, and the official line at the moment is that they're done releasing documents. But no, the fuck they're not, as investigations in multiple countries not controlled by Trump's cronies can now attest.
Ah, fuck, guys, we forgot we're not in charge of the entire world again. Oh, man.
They do that a lot, yeah.
Right, yeah, and not to spoil too much of the FBI's no evidence of any criminal wrongdoing justification, but my very next story will be about some of the evidence of criminal wrongdoing.
Yep, sure will. Now, one of the first things that the internet saw and shared from this release was a long list of accusations made against Trump through a tip line. That is literally anything anybody ever called the anonymous tip line for and said about the sitting president, if it also included Epstein. So the overwhelming majority of the stuff about him eating the flesh of babies and whatnot is certainly bullshit. That isn't to say all the stuff about him eating the flesh of babies is bullshit. This is Donald Trump, right?
I was going to say, yeah. You might want to couch.
There's bound to be a certain amount of that. But the files contain a lot of unsubstantiated tips from mentally ill people as well.
Oh, God. And the worst bit is he eats his babies well done and with ketchup. The man's a monster.
Right?
Can I say, though, because I see a bunch of this stuff getting like shared on Facebook, and I honestly feel like we were owed some fake news on the left, right? We've been being gaslit about the truth for so long. It feels nice to be wrong, right? To share something, and your uncle's like, "That's not real," and you're like, "Really, uncle? Oh no, it is not real." Nice.
I don't care.
Like you don't care. It's fun. I get it now. I get why you do this.
No, but even when you set that aside, of course, and set aside the transparent efforts to redact every Trump-related thing that they could, including taking down shit that they'd already published when they realized that he was in it and then sheepishly putting it back when people noticed, there's still plenty of Trump in this latest batch. His name still shows up hundreds of times, and that includes direct and secondhand accusations of sexual assault in relation to Epstein.
By not crazy people.
Right.
By FBI agents and himself.
Really?
In emails where he keeps saying, "Man, do I love raping kids. Thanks so much for setting that up, Jeff."
Yeah,
really,
right.
Appreciate.
Whereas if he'd said, "I don't like raping kids," we wouldn't know about that because in genuinely at least one case, they redacted the word "don't," presumably because they misread it as "Don T." I put the links in front of you guys. They redacted "don't."
Yep, there's literally no possible other reason that they could have done that in that sentence, yeah. But Trump is hardly alone in the files. At least not even the only one from his own cabinet meetings in the files. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick is in there inviting himself to Epstein's Island and getting an affirmative. Now, he defends himself by saying that every time he visited Epstein, he brought his wife and kids. But that's A, not better, and B, not what he was saying before all them damn files proved that he was there.
Yeah, Mom and Dad always say how much fun it is to play with the kids at Epstein Island, but I don't get it. All they do is stare out the window.
Oh, God.
Sometimes they just start screaming, and I'm like, what's the matter? And they're like, nothing. And I'm like, okay, well, PlayStation?
Okay, well, what I don't get is, what does Lutnick want us to believe that his visits were like, given how many people visited the island and given how much creepy criminality was going on when they did? Like,
yeah.
The best case scenario is Epstein like running some sort of French farce where he's having to entertain the Lutnicks for a delightful innocent cookout on the same night that he's got half of Silicon Valley over for a paedophile orgy. You know, having to do quick costume changes between the two like he's Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
You kids want to go in the hot tub? No, is the answer.
So now, another high-profile name is, of course, Elon Musk. And I'm sad to report that despite what you might have seen, he did not inspire Epstein to turn off all the lights on the island and pretend he wasn't home.
That was the one that got me. It got me so good. I shared it with everybody I know.
Yeah. No, but no, Musk actually emailed to ask when would be the wildest night to visit his island, and Epstein's response was very much in the category of, yes, come rape children with me anytime.
Yep.
In response to the release, though, Musk said he was sure that that email was going to be used to smear his name, but, like, it's there. I mean, like, they're like, I don't care when and how you release the can I come rape children on your child rape island emails. It's going to smear your fucking name, man.
Yeah, the truth will do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've literally never been sadder than when I saw that the girls' FTW email was fake. Like, whoever did that, I just want you to know, first of all, that was super funny and cool and awesome, but also, you broke my heart, okay?
Yeah.
You broke it. Stick it in a file. Do a better fake.
Okay, so like, right, that one was fake, but Musk's actual defense on Twitter was real, and that defense was, he didn't need the famous pedophile's help in finding young women for him to hook up with. He could do that on his own and, quote, still have 99% of his mind available to think about other things, unquote. And I guess those other things are, like, presumably, how he just boasted about being able to run his own pedo ring. He didn't need someone else's pedo ring. He had his own. And wait, Musk's pedo ring, is that what the Hyperloop was all along? Was it Musk's pedo ring?
I think that's why he got so into drilling tunnels, though, probably. Yeah.
I wanted to call it the X-Files, but that was taken, so yeah. I gave up.
So, yeah, also we've got founder of the Virgin Group, Richard Branson. He was in the file several hundred times, mostly in terms of offering up advice on how Epstein could refurbish his image after the child rape became public knowledge. It also included an invitation for Epstein to visit him anytime, quote, as long as you bring your harem, end quote.
Oof.
He assures us, though, that he was talking about adult ladies when he said that.
Okay,
so.
Look, I know Richard Branson's lying, you know Richard Branson's lying, but the image of the one guy who only knew about the adults on Epstein Island reading the papers being like, fuck, I just always went to MILF night. I just always went to MILF.
No.
Oh, this looks so bad.
Oh, God.
It looks so bad.
But the bar now for a good defense stands at, I asked to engage in the sex trafficking, but not the underage sex trafficking. I remain a knight of the British realm.
Yes! Yes! Right, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
There are plenty of more names to add to that list, of course. Serial sexual assaulter and person whose final directorial project will always have been Melania, Brett Ratner shows up.
Brett.
Yeah,
you
as does
just
LinkedIn.
Killed yourself, kiddo.
Right. As does LinkedIn co-founder Reid Hoffman, who presumably just shows up anywhere that there's email, I think.
Oh, man, I like the idea that Epstein couldn't figure out how to uninvite him.
Yeah.
Like, he just keeps, I keep finding him on my junk island. I thought I told him to keep off the junk,
no,
but he's just dating the junk island now.
So now other notable names include former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, New York Giants co-owner Steve Tisch, the artist formerly known as Prince Andrew, some more, professional transphobe and person I have to denounce as often as Muslims are asked to denounce Islamic terrorism, Richard Dawkins, Google co-founder Sergey Brin, former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, only linguist most people can name Noam Chomsky, fully automatable woo merchant Deepak Chopra, and former President Bill Clinton. So Republicans in Congress are demanding to talk to that last one.
Okay. Imagine you're one of those traffic kids and you like make it out into the world. You get yourself a college education. First day of college, you got to read manufacturing consent. I mean, come on. Woof. That's no fun.
Right. Yeah. But now we know exactly whose consent Chomsky was manufacturing. So we have that answer.
Yeah. Wow. Now, I should say up front that the list I just gave you is far from exhaustive. Hell, I don't even think any of the major news agencies are even done going through all 3 million documents at the time of this recording. So it's possible that there are still a few major revelations yet to unearth. And Marsh has even more people to tell you about in a minute. But I should emphasize here that not every name that was in the files deserved to be there. Like, for example, the fucking victims who were repeatedly named and pictured in unredacted files that were among the ones released. Attorneys for the victims called it, quote, the single most egregious violation of victim privacy in one day in the United States' history, end quote.
Right. And keep in mind that this all happened because Trump called his own double bluff in a Twitter fight with Elon Musk, who was also bluffing.
Yes.
They played chicken with cars full of sex trafficking victims with their names on them.
Okay, yep. But that would still be safer than putting those victims in a Cybertruck instead.
No, that's true.
Depends on whether it's driving, but yes, probably.
I'm not sure if it does. I think just static.
If you're lucky, it just doesn't start at all.
Rogue baloney.
Now, well, actually, I guess it could probably catch on fire even just sitting there. So. Now, the DOJ promises that they're totally deleting the files once the legal violations are pointed out to them, which is great, because once you delete files from the internet, they're gone forever. As of this recording, they've taken down about 7,000 documents that out pretty much every single victim. Right, and we're talking about photographs as well as names. But don't worry, they won't have to worry about them doing that again, because despite the fact that something like half the relevant documents remain unreleased, the Department of Justice insists that they're not releasing any more, damn it, and Trump is urging people to get over it.
Okay, what if I do a racist AI video of the Obamas? You guys want to talk about that, or are you still stuck on the raping kids?
Still stuck on the, unfortunately for him.
I don't know what to give you people.
And look, the official line from the DOJ is that the remaining documents are mostly just duplicates of things that already were released and a couple hundred thousand documents that are privileged in one way or the other. But as Democratic House member Ro Khanna has pointed out, we don't have any of the documents where they discuss the sweetheart deal Epstein got or the numerous decisions not to prosecute the people involved, which means there's still some damning shit that's unreleased. A fact that you almost certainly could have surmised just from the fact that Trump was asking people to move on. And with apologies to them for having to transition straight from the child rape story, it's time for a word from this week's sponsor, Quince.
Ooh, we could be anti-vaxxers. Like, we could sell keto stuff.
Look, for the last time, Eli, I'm not doing QED anymore, but that doesn't mean I've switched sides.
You haven't switched sides yet.
All right, guys, you ready to grab some lunch?
Noah, what are you wearing?
Oh, this? This is just a little something that Louis XIV used to wear.
Louis XIV?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm told it was the height of fashion.
Yeah. Noah, if you're looking to up your wardrobe game, you should try Quince.
What's Quince?
Quince has everyday essentials with quality that lasts. Organic cotton sweaters, polos for every occasion, lighter jackets that keep you warm in the changing seasons. The list goes on. Plus, Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're not paying for brand markup, just quality clothing.
But have you actually tried it?
I sure have. Quince sent us some stuff to try, and Anna picked herself out a brand new wool coat. She looks amazing, and it feels fantastic. That's why I, Eli Bosnick, personally endorse Quince.
All right, guys, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/skeptocrat for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/skeptocrat. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptocrat.
All right, guys, thanks.
Noah, did you steal that from a museum?
Well, can one really steal from a museum, Marsh?
Yes.
Oh. Well, then, yes.
And we're back. And next up in headlines, in Lord Scandalson news, a.k.a. Peter lack of principles.
There it is.
Staying with the Epstein files, with so much evidence of wrongdoing by someone in such a position of political power, it is only right that this latest revelation results in real-world consequences and a resignation. Not like a resignation of your pedophile in chief, obviously. You know, he's going to survive this just fine. He'll just distract from his friendship with Jeff F. by continuing to throw bombs at Iran, Venezuela, and the US box office. But over here in the UK, where there are things like effects and consequences and the barest modicum of moral accountability, we have seen Epstein's friends get at least a little taste of what's due to them.
That's right. The public knowledge that they settled for a 12-seat private plane.
I was like, what's coming to it? Did they get raped by drunk billionaires then?
So we've already seen Andrew Mountbatten Windsor lose his official royal title and his plush royal residence. So he's forced to see out the rest of his days in a different luxury estate, but not the super, super fancy ones, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it. Once Noah made me fly coach somewhere, so...
I'm sorry, what do you mean once?
Then we have Andrew's ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson, whose charity Sarah's Trust, great use of the word trust, by the way, it closed this week after it was revealed in the latest release that she flirted with Epstein, she joked about marrying him, she described him as a legend and her pillar, and she told him that she would not and could not call him a P. I assume she means pedo, which is kind of ironic because that's the one title beginning with P that her ex-husband Andrew can still lay claim to.
Oh, I give him a piece of shit as well.
Look, yeah. You might have provided sex slaves as young as 7 to 70-year-old men, but there's no need for name-calling, am I right, everybody?
Look, that is not to say that every British person mentioned in the Epstein files ought to lose their job with the charity or be forced to move out of their home. And I say that because, for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, I'm in the Epstein files.
Yep.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. So this is something I found out midway through recording the Gambona show last week. And very quickly afterwards, it was followed by me finding out that Eli had bought marshesintheepsteinfiles.com.
Okay, true story, and a little peek behind the curtain here. I actually already owned marshesintheepsteinfiles.com a while ago, and I was planning a prank with it, but as I was, literally, halfway through photoshopping his face onto the photos of actual predators and my face onto the photos of their actual victims, I realized that that one needed a little more time to cook, so that's why we have the hurry. That's why we were ready.
Oh, and I know that's true, by the way. That's a literally true thing, and I know that because before Eli found out he was off for that episode, I tried to buy it so that I could sell it to him incognito and make back all the company money that he pissed away on flight upgrades.
Okay. I have wide hips, no illusions. Making me flight coach is ableism.
Okay.
Okay, so brief side note on the most surreal thing to happen to me of late. It turns out, after I went on the record with BuzzFeed describing the time that I saw Lawrence Krauss grab the breast of an attendee at a skeptical conference in Australia, which made up part of the reporting that then revealed to the world what Krauss had been up to for apparently years, Krauss brainstormed with his very good friend Jeffrey Epstein how to discredit my witness account and the witness accounts of all the people who actually witnessed and were in the BuzzFeed report, and to show me to be a liar. So, yeah, as Cecil summarized it when I told him, a creepy scientist and an evil billionaire literally plotted to destroy me and still failed.
It's pretty cool.
It's unclear if that email exchange happened within a hollowed out volcano or not.
Right. Yep. I mean, at the very least, it happened from an island hideout, right?
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To be fair, Marsh is one of the last three remaining humans who isn't constantly lying. The closest Marsh gets to lying, in my experience, is when I say something stupid to him and he pauses and then he makes up people who might have a question about what I just said. So that's my experience.
So with that out of the way, back to British people who did deserve to be destroyed over their relationship with Epstein.
I still think you should be destroyed.
You always thought that, though.
It turns out that former Labour MP, Lord, diplomat, and legendarily shady fucker Peter Mandelson is all over the Epstein files for being, well, a legendarily shady fucker, essentially.
Yeah.
It was Epstein who paid £10,000 for Mandelson's husband to take a course in osteopathy, to the point where the General Osteopathy Council have had to come out and distance themselves from this.
Really?
And when even the osteopaths think you're full of shit, you know you fucked up.
Hey, everybody, we're just hoping people mistake us for bone doctors, okay? We don't want to get involved in this. We're evil in a lot of ways. This is like the one way in which we're not evil.
Yeah. When Epstein was convicted in 2008, Mandelson promised to stay by him, and that appears to be one of the few promises Lord Mandelson kept during his long, illustrious political career. We found out that Mandelson helped Epstein get a visa to visit Russia. We found out that Mandelson boasted to Epstein about how he persuaded Gordon Brown to resign as Labour leader when he was Prime Minister. We saw photos of Mandelson hanging out with Epstein on a yacht and hanging around in a hotel room in his tighty-whities talking to a redacted woman who was in Epstein's orbit. We saw him calling Epstein a naughty boy as he described his plans to celebrate his freedom. And we found out that he'd used Epstein's private chauffeur and would ask to stay in Epstein's houses whenever he was in town because of their, quote, better facilities.
Look, you ever try to rape children at a Ramada? It's a fucking nightmare, okay?
But perhaps most damningly of all, we found out that Mandelson was briefing Epstein on upcoming government policy changes, which allowed Epstein to short the market and make a fortune at the expense of the British taxpayer. There's even email chains where Mandelson receives a confidential email from the Prime Minister while he was still a senior figure in the British government, and literally within minutes he's hit forward to send it to his pedo best pal. And all of that is damning to the point of, I'd argue, potential criminality. And Lord Mandelson finds himself the subject of an investigation from the Metropolitan Police as a result. He also finds himself no longer a member of the House of Lords, having been forced to resign his lifetime peerage. And with any luck, he'll also find himself getting to know another of Jeffrey Epstein's former residences, the inside of a prison cell.
There you go. Man, I tell you, I can't wait for him to have not killed himself.
Yeah, I'm confused. Why am I also being guarded by the New York Police Department?
And the thing about all of this that elevates it to a serious political scandal right now is that Mandelson wasn't just a sitting member of the House of Lords who gets to decide on laws and also a long-term figure in the Labour Party. He was also the man that Keir Starmer chose to be the US ambassador. And that was a role he only lost after more details about his close friendship with Epstein became public. In September 2025, he lost the role. But it was a role that he was given, even when plenty of details about that friendship were already available, especially to someone as well-briefed as the leader of the country.
Yeah, the leader of your country, Marsh. You have to specify
when
you're trying to associate national leader with knows what the fuck is going on to an American audience. It doesn't make sense otherwise.
So Starmer has given a full public apology, saying that Mandelson portrayed Epstein as someone he barely knew, and that Starmer says he believed Mandelson's lies. But that is not a defense. Mandelson's entire political career has been one scandal after another. Like, he's had to resign from cabinet twice in his career due to lies and corruption. If Keir Starmer believed him, that shows a monumental naivety that would render him unfit for office. And it isn't that one. Instead, this is Starmer banking on us being as naive and trusting as he wants us to believe that he has been. And if he thinks that's going to work and that's going to save his career in number 10, that might be the most naive belief of all.
There you go.
You guys are picturing Keir at lunch with Marge. He's just, do you think there might be people who ask? And in Pump for the Olympics news, if there's a worst job associated with the Olympics, it's North Korean athlete who doesn't win. Being blown up by a rocket because you don't run faster than Kenya definitely sucks the worst. But the second worst job has to be for the World Anti-Doping Agency, commonly known as WADA. These professional spoil sports have made it their mission that in man's search for excellence, he shouldn't inject too much oxygen back into his blood before he drinks it or whatever the fuck people are allowed to do these days. And this week, they are looking into aerodynamic penis pumping.
Okay, I feel like maybe they were already looking into that, but then they got caught and now they're going to justify that with this official investigation. It was work, actually. Diane, it was.
It's
I'm just surprised to learn that penis pumping is an Olympic sport and excited. I'm excited.
I am not, yeah. So, to the controversy, currently being called Penisgate. This actually started last year when two of Norway's Olympic medalists, Marius Lundvik and Johan Andre Forfang, were given 3-month suspensions after the team was found to have secretly adjusted the seams of their suits around the crotch area at the 2025 World Ski Championships. And not for making their junk look bigger. The day the Olympics makes that a crime is the day I appear in the Epstein files. No, they were basically using their crotches as like mini parachutes to fall slower.
Okay, like some more mini than others. It gets very cold on those ski slopes.
Right. You,
yeah. So I think what we're trying to say here is that if you're ever falling off of a building or a high place and you have a penis, apparently there's something you can do here. Mess with it. Try some different configurations.
Yeah. Batwing. So that said, some have claimed that jumpers have now switched to other methods to game the system when they are actually measured for their suits. Data which is taken by a 3D scanner from the lowest point of their genitals. These accusations include injecting acid into their penises.
What?
Or putting clay in their underwear to make their measurements temporarily bigger and therefore their suits looser for when they compete. And look, Olympic dreams, Olympic schreams. If you're injecting acid into your dick, mm-hmm. you have lost the plot,
Amen.
Okay?
You've lost that, and I imagine any chance of getting an erection in the future as well.
Right? Like, just imagine how the acid dick guys feel when they hear that it, you know, could have just been clay. They're like, fucking what?
You just hear from outside the room, clay? Fucking clay? Now, WADA, to be fair, has yet to find any hard evidence that this is actually taking place. But in the words of WADA president Witold Banka, quote, ski jumping is very popular in Poland, Banka's home country. So I promise you, I'm going to look into it.
Oh, God, the quote's amazing. The Guardian knew exactly what they were doing in their article. They put the quote from WADA as the subheading. This is the quote they had in there. If anything was to come to the surface, we'd look at it.
Well done.
Did.
Hell yeah.
Well done. And in Fart of the Deal news, I want to start off by saying that regardless of the answer, the fact that we have to earnestly ask, did Donald Trump shit himself in the middle of an Oval Office press availability speaks pretty loudly to his ability to deftly guide this country through an unforeseen national crisis, right? Like a severe storm, a hostile attack, or being governed by a man you can't trust not to shit himself during a fucking signing ceremony.
To be fair, this is the closest I've ever felt to my president.
Okay,
so, you know,
no, that's fair. Yeah.
Think about
so, us. So I'm sure our listeners will have already heard the rumor that Trump audibly soiled himself in the middle of a news conference, and I'm sure you've also heard the vociferous denials from the Trump camp. So is there any evidence that he actually soiled himself on camera? Well, depends. But in the absence of those, we can only judge by the audio and the reaction by the people around him at that moment.
Okay, Noah, are you suggesting there's been a pants-shitting cover-up? Do journalists need to ask what the president poo and when did he poo it?
they should, God damn it. Now, honestly, it wouldn't be the first time that we saved a presidential admission to solve a scandal, Marsh. So we just like that in this country, I guess. Now, I have reviewed the audio. A lot. And I'll offer my conclusions, but I don't want to prejudice anybody before they've heard the evidence, so I brought a clip.
Chemists are coming up with new opioids faster than the government has been able to keep up. Opioids faster than the government has faster than the government than the government than the government.
Gentlemen.
So, first of all, though, I think you're doing the work that needs to be done right here.
Thank
this
you.
Is the work
yes.
right here. This clip blows everything wide open. This is our Zapuda film.
Thank you.
We can very clearly hear the shit in his pants go back into the cleft.
So, yeah, so no, I would say that's an unmistakably flatulent sound. Now, of course, as Eli reminds us during stage breaks at our live shows constantly, there are a lot of different things that can make flatulent sounds. That could have been the sound of a chair being scooched or something. And of course, even if it was ass-based, that doesn't prove that we're talking about a substantive issue. Could have just been a gaseous issue.
That's right, everybody. The President of the United States is currently employing the I swear it was my chair guy's defense that didn't work for you in third grade.
Even when it was actually your chair, yeah. Now,
As to the reaction of the people behind him, well, I did a pretty solid skeptical experiment on that one. Pretty proud of myself. See, I saw reports on social media about this before I saw the video. So when I first viewed it, I did so without the sound and no cue as to when in the minute and 40-second video he was supposedly shitting himself. So I watched several times to see if I could pick out a moment where, like, people were obviously reacting to a shart. And to be fair, I could not.
Okay, but this is the genius of Trump's strategy of always saying such crazy things that the people behind you will be constantly trying not to pull a face in response.
Oh, like, interesting.
He lives his life with the constant plausible deniability of any unfortunate follow-through having happened. Like, were they grimacing because he shat himself? Or were they grimacing because what he just suggested constituted at least three separate war crimes? It's impossible to say.
These are great points. Yep. Now, so once I had listened to it, though, it did appear that two of the women standing beside him looked over at the movement moment with sort of a holy shit did he shit kind of an expression that vanished in a hurry. Although the picture circulating where the lady in the green jacket like seems to be holding her nose, that's a far more innocuous gesture in real time that it could be trying to wave a shit smell away surreptitiously, but it could also be that thing where there's like a hair 3 millimeters from your nose and you need it to be gone and you tried scrunching your nose a lot of different ways and that doesn't work, but you want to go quickly so there's no way it looks like you're picking your nose.
Yeah, see, this is right? Why we put Heath in the middle at live shows. He has such a better poker face when I shit myself than Noah
he
does.
He does, yeah. Yeah.
Is that also why you start so many of the live shows borderline naked? Like, you can't shit your pants if you're not wearing pants.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there's right. Always yeah. One there free one.
Now, the canary in this particular coal mine should be the person standing closest to Trump's rump at the point of departure. But unfortunately, that's RFK Jr., a man known for swimming in sewage and driving around with dead shit in his car. I firmly believe that RFK Jr. could eat a banana split's worth of human feces with no facial reaction whatsoever. So the fact that he goes on through this whole video wearing the placid expression of a man whose operative brain worms stepped out for a coffee break tells us nothing.
Yeah, honestly, I'm surprised he hasn't put the president's shit on his upside down food pyramid.
Right, yeah, right. Now, the other evidence offered of self-soilment, of course, is the fact that Trump shuts down the press conference exactly like 5 seconds after we heard the wind chimes, and reporters are ushered out with a sense of urgency. That being said, the fact that the first question you hear those reporters shouting as they're being pushed out is, can you respond to the new Fox News poll that say people think ISIS tactics are too aggressive, suggests other possible explanations for which particular load of shit prompted him to clear the room.
Yeah, if right. I was trying to duck that question, I just shit myself is significantly better than whatever he was doing. So
Then actually, honestly, answering. Yeah. So the verdict here is that as much as I would like to say, yes, Trump shat himself on camera and all the filthy bastards that continue to work for this corrupt regime have to at least put up with that smell on a regular basis, Marsh is here, so I have to be a good skeptic if I ever want to write for his fucking magazine again. And I have to admit that we don't really know. It's possible that he shat himself. It's possible that he just had a room-clearing fart. It's possible it was a different sound and he wanted those people out. And it's also possible that he just shat all over himself. And the fact that he ended the meeting right afterwards had nothing to do with that. And normally he'd be fine just making everybody sit in a small room trapped with his own gangrenous ass gas, which honestly seems like the most likely explanation.
Yeah. Next up in headlines, in we never specified what we were reforming news. Given that the premiership of Keir Starmer might not actually last to the end of this sentence, you'd think Labour's natural opposition would be doing their utmost to present a quiet, competent front. After all, you never interrupt your enemy when they're in the process of making a mistake. The problem is, at this point, the main opposition to Labour is Reform PLC, and no organisation headed up by Nigel Farage is capable of anything approaching either competence or quietness. So there is literally an abundance of reform fuck-ups that I'm going to have to whistle-stop through for you this week.
All right, everyone, we've changed our slogan to Reform. Don't vote for us, we are far worse. Nobody's going to notice that, will they? You think that's a good one?
Well, but so, to be honest, if you had to wait until Labour wasn't making a mistake, you'd never get to do any damn thing, Marsh.
Okay, that's fair. That is fair. So on the plus side for reform, they have actually been increasing the number of seats they get in Parliament of late, and they have more MPs than at any time in the pseudo-party's very short history. But that's only because of their willingness to roll out the red carpet for any Tory MP who can tell which way the wind is blowing, so they'll join Reform and leave the Tories. And it turns out that Nigel Farage's belief in a hard border doesn't extend to the seating plan in Parliament.
Now, you know Nigel gets super psyched every time he reads about an affair in The Guardian, right? He starts looking up the number to make a welcome call. Hey!
Yeah. I mean, he gets like sent in three and realizes it's not one of his affairs first, just to be on the... Yeah. The safe side.
I'm not calling myself again, damn it.
The Reform roll call now includes Lee Anderson, the former deputy chairman of the Tories during the last government, Andrea Jenkins, the former Tory minister for higher education, David Jones, a former Tory minister for Brexit, Jake Berry, a former Tory chairman, Nadine Dorries, former Tory minister for digital culture, media and sport, Danny Kruger, who was the political secretary of Boris Johnson, Maria Caulfield, who used to be the Tory health minister, and Nadeem Zahawi, who is a former Tory chancellor. Now, chancellor is effectively the second most powerful position in government, and Zahawi was chancellor. Zahawi defected to Reform after failing to become the leader of the Tories, and then after unsuccessfully begging the new leader of the Tories to make him a lifetime peer in the House of Lords. But Kemi Badenoch said no, and so he defected to Reform. And so Zahawi, he's actually joined Reform, and he's been joined at Reform in the last couple of weeks by the other former Tory leadership hopefuls who failed, Robert Jenrick and Suella Braverman, both of whom held senior positions in the previous Tory government. There are literally now more former Tory leadership hopefuls in Reform than there are in the Tory party. Genuinely. And it seems like the only former Tory that Reform wouldn't welcome with open arms is Liz Truss. And we can only really say for now.
Yeah. Well, she's busy podcasting for an audience the fifth of the size of ours. Marsh, let her cook.
Tories are going, I don't get it. Our party already has blackjack and hookers. What are they doing?
And obviously, what's stupid about all of this is that Reform are running currently as the outsider challengers to the establishment who want to fix the country, by which they mean fix the problems caused by the people who now fill the Reform benches in Parliament. Which has led to these newly minted Reform MPs having to give speeches criticising the government that created the mess we're in, while hoping nobody asks them where they were when those messes were made.
Okay, come on, Marsh. That's only one of the things that's stupid.
Thank
about all of
you.
This.
Okay, yeah, fair. Still, Reform's plan is to appeal to the common man and woman, which is why they were critical of the Labour government who failed to overturn the cap on child benefits. It's a cap that means parents on benefits can only receive financial aid for their first two children and none of the subsequent children they might have, leaving larger families languishing in poverty. So Reform were right to join the calls to remove that policy, though, again, it was a policy that was written by and introduced by the MPs who now make up the Reform ranks.
Well, right, but Marsh, who knows better how to defeat them than themselves?
Ooh.
It's like a mirror match in Mortal Kombat.
I bet it was hard to have the meeting where they set that policy with the three Christmas ghosts interrupting everyone constantly, right? Fuck, another one?
So eventually, Labour did announce that they were going to remove that child benefit cap and raise 500,000 children out of poverty in doing so, giving Nigel Farage just what he'd been asking for. Which is why, obviously, Farage announced a new proposed Reform policy to reinstate that child benefit cap.
Oh,
and why was he now so keen to plunge 500,000 children back into poverty? It's so he could fulfil his promise to spend that saved money knocking 5p off the price of pints in a pub. So it is now official Reform policy for deadbeat dads to blow their kids' food money on booze. Yeah. That's what they're going for.
Now, to be clear, it's just official policy now. That's always been the policy.
Right. No, that's been the fucking British national pastime for quite a while, I think. Yeah.
But the thing is, if that is Reform policy, apparently nobody told Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick, who actually voted with the Labour government this week to remove that child benefit cap in defiance of Farage's wishes. So was this a principled stance by the former Tories, who'd seen the error of their ways, maybe being visited by those three ghosts that Eli mentioned? Well, not so much. It turns out that during the vote, they just accidentally walked into the room full of people voting aye on the proposal to remove the cap, and they didn't realize they were in the wrong room, so they ended up voting the wrong way by mistake.
Yeah. Wow. On the one hand, it's their job to know this, and they're bad at their jobs. On the other hand, Marsh, your entire government is the Iowa caucus, and I get it.
Okay, so Eli, I had to write and then delete so many notes making fun of the UK's governmental structure because I kept looking up from my notes and then I would see America around my laptop and I was like, fuck, if I was Norwegian, I could make a really good fucking joke here, I bet.
It's just simple, it's just bad.
Okay, so while we are talking about the stellar intellectual capacity of the MPs that Reform have recruited, we shouldn't overlook the talents that they threw away, such as their former chairman, Rupert Lowe, who was among the first MPs to win a seat for Reform, but then he was kicked out of the party over bullying allegations, leading him to go on and start his own new right-wing anti-immigrant party with, you know, hookers and blackjack, but British blackjack and English hookers, actually. And that party was called Restore Britain. And no, that's nothing like Reform UK. No idea what you're talking about.
There's going to be a smaller offshoot that breaks off of that called Improve England, and a smaller offshoot of that called fucking Enhanced Albion or whatever. This is inevitable. Whenever you start taking Russian money, Marsh, this stuff happens, right?
Yeah, they'll have to start moving on from England into even smaller regions, like ameliorate yes. Yorkshire, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right.
So most recently...
Spiff up Birmingham!
They're not going anywhere near Birmingham, I can promise you that.
Ever look round the living room?
So most recently, Roops was over on Twitter trying to estimate the UK's true population and not what the woke Office for National Statistics would have you believe.
Oh, God.
Because he reasoned that official estimates have our population at 69.3 million people. And he thinks that's way off because there are 91 million active mobile phone subscriptions. And he points out, yes, we know some people will have two phones for work or whatever reason. But he says... millions of children won't, nor will some elderly. So who has all of these 30 million extra phones? Illegal immigrants. He actually concludes in the tweet, current estimates of the illegal migrant population are so wrong, it is millions out.
Guys, Baby Shark has been viewed 16.6 billion times and there are only 8 billion people on the planet. We can only conclude that somehow sharks are watching this video too.
So yeah, maybe Rupert Lowe has cracked it. Maybe there really are 21.7 million illegal immigrants with phones in the UK. But bear in mind, that would just be the ones with the phones.
Right.
What about the ones who don't have phones? Like, for example, children illegal immigrants or some elderly illegal immigrants.
Right,
they don't
yes.
do phones. There might be billions of people living in the UK. Or there's just lots of people with like a work phone as well as their personal phone. Yeah. Or they've got a SIM card in their iPad or they've got smartwatches. Or they've got a SIM card in the smart meter that works out their electricity bills, which millions of us have. Also, children do have phones, Rupert, and so do the elderly. Though we all know of at least one elderly former Reform MP that we wish didn't have a phone.
Okay, to be fair, there's too many phones, it must be migrants, is way less fun than the old school version of this conspiracy, which used solid waste measurement in the sewers to make the same claim.
Yes, that's true.
Although I will say, though, convincing racist Brits that the immigrants are making their more 5G around them, that's probably going to get some motherfuckers to the polls. I like the strategy.
And finally, while we are looking at the right-wing alternatives to the Tories, we have to mention UKIP.
Oh, do we?
That's the ex that's raging, that's raising Nigel Farage's kids since he left for that newer model. Somehow, UKIP as a party still exists, and it's a party that's even undergoing a rebrand, and they've got a new proposed logo and everything. And that would be an extremely Nazi-looking iron cross. That's their logo, along with a spear. And I thought, maybe they just misunderstood what was meant by put a cross next to your preferred candidate.
Yeah. Okay, listeners, I had heard about this thing and just kind of assumed it was, you know, like the Nazi cross, but it just is the Iron Cross.
Yeah.
Like, if the Nazis were a band, I would advise them to sue UKIP.
Yes. Yeah, right. No, and honestly, it's almost like that Iron Cross is just distracting from the fucking spear. What is a goddamn spear doing in the logo of your political party, guys?
Yeah, nothing good. Nothing good at all.
Yeah.
Well, sadly, we're not actually going to see this new logo in elections anytime soon because it was rejected by the Electoral Commission, which is good news. Though it is worth pointing out, the reason for the rejection wasn't because they'd used an obviously and explicitly Nazi symbol for their party, but actually because the logo's tagline, The New Right, was written in too small a font to be legible on a ballot paper.
Oh, no, that should be fine. Most of our voters can't read anyway.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, Labour are in chaos, while all of the options on the right are in shambles. Who says there is no political choice in this
exactly.
country?
Exactly. And in Buttermace news, rabid transphobe, victim of Antifa handshakes, and certified crazy person, Nancy Mace made her aides upvote her in Who's Hotter polls on Reddit. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, so we're going to talk about it.
What?
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with Nancy Mace, she is a Republican who started at My Platform Is That I Hate Trans People and only got crazier from there. Her shenanigans include the aforementioned handshakening, in which she accused a trans advocate of shaking her hand so hard he sprained her arm, a lie instantly dismissed by the existence of lots of other people in the room.
Okay, I was not familiar with this, so I had to look this up. Apparently she claimed he began to aggressively and in an exaggerated manner shake her arm up and down in a handshaking motion with her arm flailing for about 3 to 5 seconds. That's what she said. And flail is such a wild and dramatic word to use there.
Yes.
Is she this dramatic with all hand gestures? And then he viciously assaulted the palm of my hand with an open-palmed slap that was dangerously close to head height.
And don't even get me started on the naked deception he employed when he encouraged me to go down low.
Okay.
I had no reason to believe speed was even an issue.
I wasn't warned. I wasn't told. Look, I know that thing with the handshake is just a crazy lie, but if that was actually something someone did, if you were like, oh, she wants to kill a bunch of kids, hey, that's really nice to fucking do. And then everyone you work with in your very real 501c3 was like, looks like a normal handshake to me. That yeah. rocks.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
Okay, but it's actually not just that. She also accused her ex-husband of abuse, drugging, and trafficking women from the floor because the things she says there are technically legally protected. She then later doubled down on those accusations, sharing a naked picture of herself during a hearing on cybersecurity, claiming her ex-husband had taken it without her consent. And as we learned from a New York Magazine piece titled Nancy Mace Is Not Okay This Week, these are among the more sane things she has spent her time in office doing.
Okay, you got to call your piece something, but nobody was under the illusion that Nancy Mace was okay.
That's
New
fair,
York
yeah.
Magazine.
So here's a bit more about what Nancy's been up to. Almost none of which I heard of. She apparently cursed out the TSA when they were late picking her up so badly that a police report was filed. She was the subject of a House Ethics Committee inquiry about her lodging expenses and reimbursement practices. Or, as one of the staffers in her article put it, quote, I go into the office, and after 6 months, I was like, man, this is one of the worst people I've ever met. I'm going to move back to South Carolina, end quote.
Look, we've all had shit bosses, but how many of us have had prefer to move to South Carolina instead levels
yes.
of shitty?
Oof. Right, yeah, consider all the extra bars you've got to clear, too, to be one of the worst people someone's ever met who's from South Carolina.
Right? The hole just gets deeper. But that's not all. Mace apparently repeatedly sent staff out for late-night alcohol runs and made them clean multiple properties that she was renting out as Airbnbs rather than hiring a maid.
Okay, by alcohol runs, even that is slightly underselling what happened. Because this wasn't a, hey, could you just grab me a bottle of wine? I'm working late. I want to try and relax while I'm doing this very serious work. Instead, her staffers say they were getting calls at 2 a.m. to go get her bottles of tequila.
Oh my God.
I don't care what your life looks like. If you find yourself at 2 a.m. with the need to open a fresh bottle of tequila multiple times, you're in a bad place. And I don't just mean South Carolina.
No. But my favorite part of this article is how obsessed Mace appears to have been about her reputation. According to former staffers, she instructed them to create burner social media accounts to defend her. And, as I mentioned at the top of the story, obsessively followed a Reddit poll about the hottest women in Congress and asked her aides to upvote any posts that made positive mention of her.
For fuck's sake.
Okay, I assure that it was her who stipulated that they had to be burner accounts. Or could it just be that the aides convinced her they'd need to be burner accounts just so they didn't have to put their names to what they were doing,
right.
Admitted.
Yeah. God, I feel like obsessed with one's reputation and needing another bottle of tequila at 2 a.m. are working at cross purposes. Yeah. That's just my opinion on
now,
this.
Now, as for Mace, she denies these allegations. Cameron Morabito, Mace's director of operations, told New York Magazine, "These allegations are so ridiculous that they don't even merit a response. I hope she sues you for every dime you got paid to write this defamatory bullshit," end quote. So, yeah, we'll continue to enjoy this meltdown, but, you know, from, like, really, really far back to avoid the smell of tequila.
Yeah.
And finally tonight, in AI Must Not Tell a Lie news, it's often customary to end a news bulletin with the sports news. So let's talk about the decision by the West Midlands Police to ban fans from the Israeli football club Maccabi Tel Aviv from attending a game with Aston Villa last November.
Yeah, nothing particularly topical going on in sports at the moment. That's a good call, Marsh.
Eli already covered the Winter Olympics. It's fine.
Oh, okay. But by the way, I'm calling it right now. Patriots win. By the way, I'm calling it right now. Seahawks win. I'll probably edit one of those out. I'm going to edit one of those out.
Man, you respond to one slide tackle with helicopter fire, and it's all everyone ever wants to talk about.
So, at the time, the reason given by the police was that it would be unsafe for the Tel Aviv fans to attend due to the history of violence by their supporters at away fixtures. The decision caused outrage, with claims that the police had succumbed to anti-Semitism in barring Israeli fans from attending, with some even linking it to the higher proportion of people of Muslim and Middle Eastern descent who live in Birmingham.
Yeah, British racists like to make a big deal of Birmingham's Islamic population, even going so far as to suggest certain areas of the city are now no-go zones for outsiders. But if you've ever been to Birmingham, there are actually no wanna-go zones. Like, if ISIS took over Birmingham, I'd suggest we let them have it. Yeah, no, it's yours.
I mean, I'd throw in Birmingham, Alabama as like a BOGO kind of thing.
You can have all the Birmingham.
So the police obviously denied that this was the case. They said their decision was based on information shared by the Dutch police following violence when Maccabi Tel Aviv played against Ajax in Amsterdam in November 2024. West Midlands police say they were told how their Dutch colleagues needed 5,000 officers to police the violence, with incidents of Tel Aviv fans targeting fans from Ajax's Muslim communities, even throwing some of them into Amsterdam's famous canals. And that was all, it turns out, a lie. There were only 1,200 Dutch officers involved, and there was zero targeting of Muslim populations at all. The police just straight out lied about that.
What? The Dutch love Jews. That's why they were so eager to introduce us to the Nazis when they took over during World War II.
Yeah.
Because we were their favorite people.
Yeah, no, it's pretty telling when your response to the charge of anti-Semitism is, no, not at all. I heard that they were poisoning the wells. I was worried about the wells.
But, like, that was a lie, but at least it was a lie that was authentically written by someone at the West Midlands Police. Because among the evidence that they relied on to justify this ban was reports of violence from a previous fixture when Maccabi Tel Aviv played against London club West Ham. And that was a game that took place in... never. It never happened. It didn't exist. What did happen was West Midlands Police, in analysing the risk posed by the Aston Villa game going ahead, asked Microsoft Copilot to summarize incidents of violence by Maccabi Tel Aviv games, and Copilot invented a fixture and attributed imaginary violence to it.
Wow.
Yeah, Copilot's better for Nuremberg coding anyways, so.
Little paperclip goof steps his way onto the screen, and we're all like, hey, when did you grow that little mustache, man? What the fuck?
And so all of this came out in an inquiry last month, leading to the chief constable of West Midlands Police stepping down from his role and taking early retirement on a full chief constable's pension. So, yeah, it turns out Copilot invented stories of football fan violence and then created fake evidence made to cover up for the failures of the police, proving that while AI still struggles to seem human, it is capable of being a cop.
Exactly, yes. And the mayor of New York. It's got lots of options.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
lot that I can do. And on that note, we're going to close it off. Thanks to Eli Bosnick. Thanks to Michael Marshall. And thanks to all the listeners who have liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening. And please keep telling your friends. And if you like the naive stupidity of our giving away free show business model, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat, just like all the people Heath will thank by name next week. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes for your charge, check out the brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D Minus, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that penis. Special thanks to Ryan Slotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He's the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You can definitely check him out by using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off. Keep doing Southern accents for British people. Like, this content is canned credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm to their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. This podcast is a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm LLC and was created without the use of generative AI. Its contents may not be used for AI training. Copyright 2026, all rights reserved.